morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. Michael Williams of Kirkland & Ellis on behalf of the appellant. Administrative law judges play an integral role in our modern government, and the fairness and impartiality of the proceedings before them is something upon which we all rely. Judge Mahoney, in this case, brought forward claims that the district court said strike at the neutrality of the adjudicated processes at Housing and Urban Development. The district court found that those claims made it past any bar that was established by the Civil Service Reform Act, but that Judge Mahoney lacked Article III constitutional standing to bring those claims. Now, that's a position that the federal government, as far as I can tell, doesn't even advance in this court. And that's because Judge Mahoney does have as many officials of the federal government and other aspects of government. And officials of government are often sued and can be sued in their official capacity in order to enforce constitutional and statutory rights. That was the holding of the Second Circuit's decision in Nash versus Califano, upon which we've relied, and it's consistent with other cases that have found that Article I judges and Article III officials have standing when they bring claims in order to enforce their statutory rights and responsibilities. Now, the government in this case, instead of relying on the Article III standing arguments, has raised a number of statutory arguments about prudential standing and about whether or not Judge Mahoney's claims are barred by the CSRA, that Civil Service Reform Act. On the prudential standing arguments, I think the Judge Mahoney's position is very clear. Under the ADAPSO test, Judge Mahoney need only be within the zone of interests, arguably within the zone of interests, that is protected by the Administrative Procedure Act. He need not be a beneficiary of the Administrative Procedure Act. Under this court's precedent in Cheney and in Fair versus Reno, Judge Mahoney's interests coincide with the interests of the litigants who appear before him. And those are the interests in having these fair and impartial proceedings before which Judge Mahoney is presiding and which these litigants are participating in, that are adjudicating these litigants' rights. This is borne out by the district court's suggestion, which is a suggestion that was also made by Judge Hogan in an earlier case, that Judge Mahoney might unquestionably have Article III standing if he were purporting to bring his case on behalf of the litigants who were before him. So we think prudential standing is not a bar to suit here, and that brings us back to these civil service.
On prudential standing, it does seem odd. I think the posture here is unusual, maybe not odd, but unusual, and just what the implications of that are. I guess I was trying to tease out hypothetically. Suppose Congress directed a cabinet official to take certain action, and the president directed the cabinet official how to fulfill that responsibility. Could the cabinet official have prudential standing to sue the president under your theory?
The cabinet official would not, and that raises all sorts of issues with respect to taking care that laws are executed.
Right, of course, the president, there would be an Article II issue, obviously, in that, but in terms of just getting into court, would that kind of case be resolved similarly on prudential standing? In other words, that's within the zone of interest somehow?
I think what distinguishes this case from the hypothetical that you're positing, Judge Kavanaugh, is that the Administrative Procedure Act actually sets administrative law judges apart from those agency decisions and agency policy making. That's what the Supreme Court recognized in Butts when it said that within the Administrative Procedure Act framework, an Article I judge is the functional equivalent of an Article III judge or a trial judge in making decisions. What the Administrative Procedure Act does is it establishes this bulwark, in the words of the Supreme Court in Butts, to protect and insulate administrative law judges in a way that, for example, the Secretary of Commerce might not be if he were receiving instructions from the president. So that's why it's not just that Judge Mahoney is an employee who wants to see that fair proceedings are carried out. He's a special type of employee because the Administrative Procedure Act distinguishes him from other officials within the Department of Housing and Urban Development. He has this obligation, the statutory obligation, to make sure that the proceedings before him are fair, just in the same way that an Article III judge might. And that brings us to the CSRA point, which is a reprise of the arguments that the government made before the district court, claiming that the Civil Service Reform Act bars these claims under the Administrative Procedure Act because they're actually personnel actions and that Judge Mahoney's recourse should have gone to the Office of Personnel Management.
Could I just stick for the moment on this prudential standing? The way the complaint reads, your client is arguing as to actions taken as to him and another administrative law judge. I didn't see anything about his representing the litigants who appear before the administrative law judges at the department.
That's right, Judge Rogers. Judge Mahoney is bringing actions about interference by the agency with his decisional independence, and there are references to the cases by Judge Fernandez. Judge Mahoney did not purport to bring this case on behalf of the litigants who were before him.
So therefore, do we have to determine whether under the APA it provides rights that are personal to him as an administrative law judge?
Well, I think under the APA as a statutory matter, Judge Mahoney's claim would fit within Title V, Section 702, because he is a person who is aggrieved, who has been the subject of a legal wrong.
You don't want us to get to that question. It's just the question of, given that he's an administrative law judge, that's enough to bring him within the zone of interest.
Well, it's not just that he's an administrative law judge, but it's also that it's all that that entails, Judge Rogers. I mean, he has a statutory right of action under 702 because he was legally aggrieved, because the agency had committed a legal wrong, and he's seeking right of that wrong. So there is that statutory basis. It's not a private right of action issue or a private cause of action issue.
Thinking of your answer to Judge Kavanaugh, to the extent that you're relying on the fact that administrative law judges are different from just federal employees per se.
That's right.
So it is his, I just want to be clear for standing purposes, it is his status simply as an administrative law judge.
That's right, and that's what that's exactly what the Second Circuit found in Nash versus Califano, Judge Rogers. They found that because administrative law judges have these special responsibilities, have these certain insulations and protections under the Administrative Procedure Act, that they have a qualified right of decisional independence.
This decisional independence raises a question. What decision of Judge Mahoney's was affected?
Right, and in this case, Judge Mahoney raised four different categories of claims. The first category of claims were the decisions that he wasn't allowed to make under the allegations of his complaint.
So those are other decisions that went to other judges?
Those are decisions that went to other judges, yes, Judge Kavanaugh, but it's because under the allegations of his complaint, the department selectively assigned them.
I just want to press on the term decisional independence. It doesn't seem like his decisions in any case were coerced or pressured. Rather, in some the research and those allegations were more working conditions. I know you're going to challenge that, but that seems to me more working conditions. And then some of the other things are, well, I wasn't assigned cases that should have been assigned to me. Well, that doesn't affect your decisional independence.
That's right. And I'd have two responses to that, Judge Kavanaugh. The first is, this is the same sort of issue with judicial decisional independence that arose in the Second Circuit, that is in Nash versus California.
They backed away from that case a bit, right? More than a bit.
They've backed away. There's no decision that says that the standing holding in Nash versus Califano was in any way wrong or that was dicta. I think that what they've backed away from and what they've called dicta in a later case was this idea that a production quota, which was what was at issue in Nash versus Califano, actually affected decisional independence. Mm-hmm. And because that case predates the Civil Service Reform Act, there might be statutory reasons not to rely on that case as precedent for the idea that a production quota violates the APA. Mm-hmm. But the larger point, Judge Kavanaugh, is that the Second Circuit found that production quotas there were interfering with decisional independence. And the district court in this case, Judge Boasberg, found that the allegations in Nash versus Califano were of the sort that went to the heart of the decision-making processes of the ALJs there. So in attempting to distinguish this case from Nash versus Califano, Judge Boasberg...
Assume I'm not worried about Nash versus Califano, just for the minute, that I just want to decide this based on my own evaluation of this. It does seem that there's no decision of Judge Mahoney's that's actually been affected.
It's not a case where the agency has told Judge Mahoney, you have to rule in a certain way. It interfered directly with his decisional independence in a way that affected a particular case, except Judge Kavanaugh. In the second category of claims that Judge Mahoney is raising, He's claiming that there were improper ex parte contacts that sent a litigant from
this
court.
I wanted to ask you about that. I don't understand that allegation. I just looked at the complaint again. I always thought that an ex parte communication is a communication between either a party or someone representing a party and the decision maker. There's, on the face of the complaint, there's no such allegation that that occurred.
On the face of the complaint, Judge Randolph, someone who was within the body of the agency and who reasonably could expect it to be within the decision-making processes of the agency, Mr. Anderson, who was the director of the Office of Hearing and Appeals within HUD, had an ex parte
Is he a judge?
He's not a judge. He is a supervisor within the OHA.
Well, then why isn't that analogous to a party in this court calling up and asking the head of the clerk's office, the clerk of the court, a question? When the clerk of the court answers the question, that's not an ex parte communication. Ex parte communication is with the decision maker. And on the face of the complaint, there was no such communication.
Well, Judge Randolph, under the terms of Section 557D1B, the communication need not be with a decision maker, but with somebody who is reasonably within the decision making processes of the agency or someone who comprises the body of the agency. And Mr. Anderson would fall within
either. Why wouldn't that be the clerk of the court then? Within the body. But nobody would call a communication by a lawyer with the clerk's office here an ex parte communication. I don't get it.
But Judge Randolph, Mr. Anderson wasn't a clerk of the court. He was an official within HUD who was part of the senior executive body of that branch. And he told a litigant who was appearing before Judge Mahoney in a case that was already docketed that Judge Mahoney actually didn't have jurisdiction over that case. That would be more akin to somebody who was within the administrative office of the court telling somebody that this court had no jurisdiction over their claim.
And how would that affect us?
Yeah.
We wouldn't care.
Judge Kavanaugh,
and so how did it affect Judge Mahoney? Well, that's where I'm stuck on the term decisional independence a little bit, and maybe that's a distraction here. But it seems to me, who cares from his perspective? He's still going to decide the way he's going to decide, and if he feels coerced in his decision, presumably he's going to write that in the decision. He's brought suits, so presumably he could do that in the decision, right?
Well, Judge Kavanaugh, in that case, Judge Mahoney cared because the litigant who was supposed to be appearing before him and who he felt that he needed to provide this impartial decision, and who I think it's stated in the complaint was a pro se plaintiff in this case, didn't have the opportunity to vindicate her rights through impartial processes before Judge Mahoney. So Judge Mahoney found out about that after the fact, so he didn't have an opportunity to write an opinion about it. But the decision, the interference there is the interference with the processes and not with the decision making in a particular case. That is, and again, we've had a discussion of Nash versus Califano, and I'm always a little bit hesitant to rely on any case that has Califano in the title because of the older vintage of those cases. But what they described...
Well, it's not binding on us. That's the bigger problem.
Understood, Judge. But it is instructive in the way that it defined decisional independence, where it stated that ALJs possess full and complete individual independence of action and decision for the conduct of hearings and the disposition of cases. And the agency still to this day notes that administrative law judges are by statute the proceedings before ALJs and their decisions are independent of agency influence. So it's not just the decisions themselves, but it's also these proceedings that are supposed to be conducted.
And how do those proceedings, those actions that he's complaining about, differ from working conditions for CSRA purposes?
Well, for one thing,
that's a kind of catch-all term, as you well aware, in the CSRA. And as the district court noted, it's not defined in any specific way, but working conditions would seem to encompass at least some of what's going on here.
They do, Judge Kavanaugh, and particularly we'll say with respect to some of the claims about resources, access to legal resources and the like. But on Judge Mahoney's claims that the APA had been violated, Section 3501, with respect to the rotation of judges and selection by rotation, that's not a workplace condition. It's not like any other type of claim that falls within the CSRA.
Why is it not? I'm not getting the work I'm supposed to get. That sounds like a common workplace condition kind of claim.
Right. With that said, Judge Kavanaugh, if anything, Judge Mahoney, if this were a workplace condition, could be complaining that he's relieved that he's not receiving a larger workload. I mean, that's the sort of
right.
sort of claim.
Why doesn't the CSRA then preclude or preempt?
Because it's not within it's not a significant change in his duties, responsibilities, or working conditions, which is the sort of action that's contemplated under 2302. That is,
well, you're suing. You think your client thinks it's significant.
It's significant that his decisional independence is being violated, Judge Kavanaugh. But it's not a significant change in his duties, responsibilities, or working conditions.
Focus on working conditions.
That's right. It's not a significant change in his working conditions, and that it's not affecting his workflow, his compensation, or any of the other categories of protected activities under the CSRA.
You've taken away my decisional independence, and that's not a significant change in my working conditions? Is that your theory?
It's not taking away his decisional independence, but interfering with it. And even though it's
interfering with my decisional, I'm supposed to be deciding cases on a neutral basis, and what you've done is destroy that or interfered with my ability to accomplish that. That doesn't, you know, I don't see how that is anything other than a change in working conditions.
Well, it is much more than a change in it's a change in working conditions, Judge Randolph, but it's a change in working conditions in the same way that a warrantless search or a wiretap or lots of other different protected interests that are under this court's precedence and the Supreme Court's precedence outside of the CSRA. It might involve the workplace because Judge Mahoney is an administrative law judge, but the interests that are protected under the APA are so much more than just workplace conditions. Again, this goes to that point that he's not just another employee, and what he's complaining about isn't going to increase his compensation. It's not going to help his tenure. It's not about how many pencils he has at his desk. It's about the fairness of the proceedings before him.
That's just a matter of degree, the how many pencils at the desk versus the complaint about the research versus I'm not getting cases assigned to me that should have been assigned to me. It seems, I'm not sure I see a line that can be drawn sensibly between those things for purposes of the term working conditions in the CSRA.
Judge Kavanaugh, one line might be that on App 14 in paragraph 61 of his complaint, he alleges that cases aren't just being not assigned to him, but they're being selectively assigned with political considerations in mind. And that's something that's very different from saying, I'm not getting my workflow, I'm not getting interesting cases. What he's saying is that as an administrative law judge, these proceedings that are before him are being influenced and corrupted in some way. And that's why Judge Boasberg saw that these claims were outside of the CSRA. It's not just the fact that he's not getting the work. That is true, but it's why he's not getting the work.
But you wouldn't say, if I'm not getting the work because of my gender, that would still be effect on your working conditions.
But with that said, Judge Kavanaugh, there is a specific carve-out under the CSRA for anti-discrimination
statutes. I understand
statutes.
That, but there's not a carve-out. That's, I don't know which way that cuts, but there's not a carve-out for this kind of situation. In other words, change in workplace and in working conditions based on political considerations for this kind of case.
That's true, Judge Kavanaugh, but this court and the Supreme Court have rejected this idea that the CSRA, and I think it's suggested by the government here, that the CSRA says if it's in the workplace, then it's a workplace condition. And I've raised the Stewart versus Evans precedent about the Bivens action for a warrantless search as an example. And Judge Boasberg, in his opinion, gave several reasons why Judge Mahoney's not seeking to vindicate his own interests as an employee here. Rather, he's trying to vindicate the interests of fairness and impartiality in the proceedings before him.
Well, he's got to be trying to vindicate in part his own interests, doesn't he? You're going to run back into your standing issue.
No, that's true, Judge Kavanaugh, but his interest really is in seeing that that his responsibilities and his role within this federal system are something that are protected and insulated under the APA.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Counsel for the government.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Addie Schmidt on behalf of the United States Department of Housing and Urban Development and the Office of Personnel Management. With respect to the only remaining claims, that is the APA claims, the district court concluded that those two must fail because, as the court put it, Judge Mahoney was between a rock and a hard place. To the extent Judge Mahoney is complaining about actions related to his employment or working conditions, those claims are preempted by the CSRA. If, on the other hand, any of the actions fall outside of the scope of the CSRA, Judge Mahoney lacks standing to challenge those actions. The district court's rock and a hard place metaphor was correct. Judge Mahoney's entire theory of standing depends on this court creating in him an individual right of judicial independence under the APA. There is no such right under the APA. The Supreme Court explained in Ramspeck that through the APA, Congress made the ALJs semi-independent from their employing agencies. And they did this by removing control over ALJs' tenure, promotion, and compensation out from under the employing agencies and vesting that with OPM. We know from Ramspeck that Congress created this semi-independent structure in response to, quote, many complaints against the actions of the hearing examiners, now called ALJs, that the ALJs were, quote, mere tools of the agency. Significantly, it was complaints about the ALJs, not complaints from the ALJs, that prompted Congress to legislate a degree of independence. In other words, the independence Congress created was for the benefit of the litigants.
But why not for the benefit of the ALJs, or why aren't the ALJs, at least in the zone of interest, which is the key term, I suppose, to enforce that protection, I guess, that helps the litigants? Aren't they going to be in a good position, for example, to bring claims that will in turn ensure the fairness of the process?
They're not, we would submit, Your Honor. And the Seventh Circuit spoke to this in the D'Amico case when they talked about the problems with, in the D'Amico case, the ALJs challenged the Social Security Administration's new determination on retroactive cessation of benefits, and they required that all the ALJs send notices to all of the beneficiary litigants appearing in the cases before them. The ALJs challenged that, and they argued in part that the new determination hurt the litigants in subtle ways. And the Seventh Circuit said, if that's true, we would expect a challenge from the litigants, and that would be the better course.
Well, the prudential standing, though, zone of interest, doesn't depend on the fact that there's some other better plaintiff, because you could say that in a lot of the cases where nonetheless you're in the zone of interest.
Right, but particularly with this interest, this judicial independence, for which there is no right in the APA, the problem is that you would then have the ALJ stepping out of that role and siding with a class of litigants. It would undermine judicial independence. It's hard to think of a better way to undermine judicial independence than to have the judicial officer step out of that role and onto the side of one class of litigants through a challenge.
A part of his response, it seems to me, is that there are a lot of things the litigants wouldn't be aware of.
Right.
That are adversely affecting the neutrality of the decision-making process.
Right, but that's not enough to give prudential standing. In this court's case in Goodman versus FCC, for example, this court said that a mere congruence of interests, and here we don't even necessarily have a congruence of interests, but even that is not enough because, and in Fair Employment Council of Greater Washington, this court held that a civil rights organization did not have standing to sue on behalf of victims of discrimination, even where some of the victims might not know that they were victims of discrimination.
Well, I'm thinking of the Seventh Circuit's hypothesizing of a case involving Article III judges suing the AO's office. So isn't that what the judge here is basically doing? In other words, he's complaining about how the administrative office is running things, and that's adversely affecting the court's ability to make decisions that, in fact, are going to be neutral, objective decisions, as opposed to the AO deciding that he's only going to send certain types of cases to certain types of judges.
Well, in the first place, Your Honor, as Judge Kavanaugh, I believe, pointed out earlier, there hasn't been an allegation that even one single case in any way has been impacted by any of these actions.
What about counsel's response to Judge Kavanaugh's question in that regard? That's what I'm focusing on.
I'm sorry.
In other words, his allegation is that cases are being assigned based on political considerations that are inappropriate to the independent decision-making scheme that Congress has established for administrative law judges.
Well, Judge Mahoney hasn't given this court any additional information, and in fact...
No, but we have to take his allegations as true for purposes of standing.
Right. The court has to take the facts as true. He hasn't really alleged any facts. He's given a conclusory statement that the cases are being assigned on political considerations.
Should he have said that case number 4256 should have gone to me as opposed to some other judge?
Well,
that's not
there's
necessary
only,
for standing.
Right, but there are only two ALJs at HUD, and he hasn't said which judge, what the political considerations are, why he thought that they were being
that's
assigned.
That's necessary for standing. We're at standing, counsel, at the very threshold of litigation.
Right. And there isn't any reason, and Judge Mahoney hasn't come forward with any reason that the litigants, he could put that on the record. Any of the judges could put that on the record. I'm concerned about the way this case came to me, litigants have brought claims when cases to challenge the way cases were assigned to ALJ. This court considered such a case in the ACON decision. So there isn't any showing of why the litigants themselves wouldn't be able to challenge.
Not necessary. That was.
Right, but there are many things that might not be known to the, and I think some of the court's decisions have said that, there are many things that might not be known to a litigant that doesn't give Judge Mahoney a vested interest in a judicial independence, that doesn't give him standing or an injury to bring such a claim.
On the prudential standing, which is what we're on, I think, here from the way you've articulated your position, which I think is the right way to do it, the Supreme Court's emphasized that it's a very loose standard, its most recent case, arguably within the zone of interest. And it has lots of other sentences, as I'm sure you're aware, kind of underscoring how loose that's supposed to be. You want to respond to that?
That is correct. Well, I would respond in two ways. I think that we, as we articulated in the district court and regrettably did not articulate as well in this court, but there is both a injury in fact problem for Judge Mahoney and a prudential standing problem. And even with the low threshold, he has to have some interest that was presumably within the within Congress's intent. And when you look at the specific language of the APA, there is no language that Judge Mahoney can look at that would show for these kinds of claims that Congress intended the administrative law judge to bring suit.
So when the APA talks about there ought to be this rotation, unless there are reasons to the contrary, that's not something an administrative law judge would ever have standing to challenge.
We would submit, Your Honor, that again, this goes all the way back to RAMSPEC and why Congress said that cases need to be assigned.
And by the way, a little further, according to the Supreme Court, you characterize it as complaints about the hearing examiners. There was more to it than that when Congress responded to the APA. According to the Supreme Court.
Absolutely, Your Honor, but none of those concerns went to giving administrative law judges an independent right to sue or interests beyond those that specifically speak to their position, their compensation, tenure, and promotion, their position as employees, and that is the term used in the APA. They're referred to as employees.
To the extent you're arguing, I think you have a third alternative argument about failure to state a claim under the APA provisions that are cited. They responded in the reply brief that that hadn't been raised below and that we shouldn't consider that here. Can you respond to their position on that?
Yes. It is correct that there was not a failure to state a claim specifically, and that argument also goes right back to injury. In other words, none of these things are actually rise to the level of a violation. But we believe that
I don't want to interrupt you. That collapses standing with the merits, but anyway, keep going.
But we believe that the court, in part, I think it's helpful to remember in this case that really all of Judge Mahoney's complaint was about retaliation and a hostile work environment. He alleged that HUD was taking these actions in retaliation against him, and he sort of threw in that, and some of these things arguably could theoretically interfere with his judicial independence. But those APA claims, even the heading above paragraph 61, where he starts to identify in his complaint the allegations that relate to his claims about judicial independence, I believe the heading over those says retaliation and harassment dash judicial interference with judicial independence. So I think in the district court, the motion to dismiss was and again, of course, we did address the APA claims and tried to address all of the claims, but they were addressed more in the context of Judge Mahoney's entire complaint. And, of course, those claims are now gone in favor of the government.
On the CSRA, your position is that all of this is really complaining about working conditions, correct?
That is our first argument, absolutely, Your Honor. And as Your Honor has said, Congress knows, first of all, that CSRA is exclusive, broadly so, and that when Congress wants to make an exception, it knows how to do so. For example, with the anti-discrimination laws, and of course, that's what Judge Mahoney initially sued under here.
So how do you distinguish the cases that Mr. Williams mentioned, Bush and Stewart, which take wiretapping and certain kinds of claims like that outside the scope of the CSRA? How do you distinguish this case from that case?
Those cases, are few and far between. And an employer wiretapping and conducting an unlawful search in violation of the Fourth Amendment is far different.
How? That's what I'm.
Different than these workplace conditions about resources and that.
Is it just more severe effect on your working conditions? Wiretapping would affect your working conditions.
I think it also goes to where does this right come from, if there is such a right, and there, no one questions that. All of us enjoy a Fourth Amendment right to be free from unlawful searches and seizures. So then if you're going to analyze and compare that to these, we have to look to where the right comes from. And I don't think that there is any analogous source of protection for Judge Mahoney from, someone arguably not assigning a case out of rotation, or any of these types of allegations. They just don't equate with a constitutional violation. I don't think.
In the CSRA system, though, would these kinds of claims be cognizable?
No,
you argue no for that, right?
Yeah, I'm arguing no, but I'm also arguing that, as the court has said, what you get is what you get. And just because something doesn't rise to an actionable offense under the CSRA doesn't mean that you automatically get to use the catch-all APA.
And just why wouldn't it be an actionable offense under the CSRA? Remind me of that.
Well, I think that they probably don't rise to the level even of prohibited personnel actions, such as they may fall into the catch-all significant change in working conditions, although we would argue that these really aren't significant.
Okay, so but you're sticking with your position that they're working conditions.
Yes.
Okay.
If the there are no further questions.
All right, I'm just looking. I just wanted to see. You referenced the heading for allegations that are made starting with paragraph 61?
Yes.
But, I mean, clearly it's labeled both the harassing and the interference.
Right. My only point, Your Honor, was that this, plaintiff's entire complaint was based on retaliation, and that even these claims, although, again, we acknowledge he
but this is a double heading. Because there are two different types of complaints here. At any rate, it's just a heading. And you
right.
have to look at the body of what he says. And the first allegation is something the APA directly addresses.
It does, Your Honor, although the courts have said that it is okay for the agencies to take into consideration in assigning cases the type of case, the ALJ involved, the level of experience that the ALJ may have.
This is an allegation that they're being assigned based on political considerations. That's taking that as true in the complaint.
Well, again, Your Honor, that's not necessarily a fact, which I don't see that as a fact that has to be taken as true. He hasn't given
any. What do you think it is, a conclusion of law?
I think it's a conclusory statement that doesn't have.
That's a conclusory factual statement.
Okay. Even taking.
So looking at the complaint, we have to take as true what he has alleged, that the director has failed consistently to assign him cases in a rotating manner, but selectively assign cases to judges based on political considerations. That's the allegation.
But then this court would also still have to find that that the APA vested a right in him
so
to have the cases
the
assigned this way.
Talks about assigning cases on a rotating basis unless there's an explanation as to why. And so the judge has no, he's not within the zone for that purpose?
We submit that he's not within the zone of interest for that purpose, Your Honor. And again, I understand that we have to take this as true for purposes, but where does that get the court? What would the court do? Would the court
Well, that's the merits, all right? I'm back here at standing. I just want to be clear on the government's position.
The government's position is that this absolutely is language from the APA, and that the APA does provide that cases, to the extent practicable, should be assigned. And again, at HUD there are only two ALJs, and we don't know more. But in terms of the zone of interest, it is not for the reason for assigning cases in rotation is to make sure that the litigants get a fair hearing.
So the Seventh Circuit's hypothetical about Article III judges is just wrong under the government's argument of what is necessary for prudential standing.
I'm not sure that I would say it's wrong, Your Honor, but I don't.
How is it different?
This is the argument that if an Article III judge, if the AO was somehow assigning cases
on political grounds.
Well, in part, Your Honor, it's different because these are not Article III judges, and Congress only created the ALJs as semi-independent from the agencies. What?
Quasi,
sorry.
Yeah.
So I think that's far different than the Article III situation. It's hard to analogize.
So your argument doesn't matter because they can go to the CSRA, but when it gets to CRSA, since it's not a prohibited personnel practice, it's just out of luck. So you have to wait for a new director. I'm just trying to be clear. This is something that should be very important to the government.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, and given that we're in this administrative state with all these ALJs out there.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And ALJs have brought these exact kind of claims to the MSPB and to the Office of Special Counsel as well, which is where they should be bringing these claims.
These exact kind of claims? You mean similar claims, right?
I'm sorry, not in terms of the facts, not exactly similar, but they have alleged the
right.
interference with judicial independence. And the Federal Circuit has essentially said that you know, in those cases, that it didn't rise to a level, they didn't, unless it went to an actual interference with an actual decision, there is, the secretary has discretion to both administrate the office and to, and over case management.
All right, so political assignment's okay.
No, Your Honor, it's not okay, Your Honor. It's just not for Judge Mahoney to bring that claim. I would like to, if there are no further questions, I'd like to thank the court and ask that the district court's dismissal of the case.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
1 minute of rebuttal.
Of course.
And Judge Rogers, I think that Your Honor's questions about the merits of this case go to the heart of where we stand today, which is Judge Mahoney has filed his complaint. The district court has said, but for this Article III standing issue, the complaint may go forward. So the government, my friend on the government side, who was characterizing Judge Mahoney's complaint as attack on, those are questions that are properly directed at the merits. And Judge Rogers, we think that you have the standard of review. You're perfectly calibrated here, and that Judge Mahoney should be given his opportunity to see if those merits pan out after discovery.
On the zone of interest, we do at the threshold as well.
Zone of interest goes to the threshold. And I think on that point, too, Judge Kavanaugh, I heard counsel for the government say that there's no indication that Congress intended an ALJ to bring these claims.
That doesn't matter. Right.
That's not the standard here. I'm sorry, go ahead, Judge.
I was going to ask on the CSRA, why isn't the clean solution to this that these are allegations about the working conditions of Judge Mahoney and it's covered by the plain terms of the CSRA, and obviously the Supreme Court footnote has distinguished wiretapping and warrantless searches, but this is not that.
Well, two reasons, Judge Kavanaugh. First, to do so would say that there can never be any claim by an administrative law judge.
How do we know what will happen in the MSPB process in terms of significant change in your working conditions with some of the things that are alleged here? I can't say that you're not going to prevail in the MSPB process with that kind of claim.
We don't know whether we would prevail in the MSPB process if we were to put forward that type of claim, but we do know there's no reason that people at the Merit System Protections Board should be considered to have any sort of expertise or any ability to resolve claims about decisional independence. As Judge Boasberg pointed out in his opinion, Judge Kavanaugh.
That's going back again to the characterization, but they certainly have expertise in ferreting out whether people have been affected in their workplace for improper reasons, which is essentially what you're asking here, and whether they've been denied things improperly or reassigned improperly or given cases improperly. That kind of thing seems garden variety MSPB work.
The garden variety MSPB work, Judge Kavanaugh, are reassignment, salary disputes, annuity benefits, letters of censure, as Judge Boasberg mentioned in his opinions. In our brief, we noted that under 5 U.S.C. 7521, the sort of actions that are within the MSPB's purview or
garden variety might be too strong, but at least within the related to the expertise of the MSPB, figuring out whether you're getting unfairly or improperly treated in the workplace because of assignments, because of resources, that does seem to be the nature of these allegations.
But Judge Mahoney's not alleging that he was unfairly treated, Judge Kavanaugh. He's claiming that there was a flaw in the integrity and impartiality in the process that was before him. Whether or not he was mistreated, are the subjects of the claims that were dismissed and the subject of a pending EEO complaint that he has against the agency.
The failure to provide the docket numbers and the legal research, the cases that were assigned to others. He's complaining about the transmittal of the notices of election to DOJ and the ex-party communications, right?
That's right.
And I think there's a spectrum there, actually, where it's closer to working conditions and then maybe a little bit on the outer perimeter of that.
But I'd agree that there's a spectrum, Judge Kavanaugh, and I'd say on one end of that spectrum, interfering with the pending case by telling a pro se litigant that there's no jurisdiction, that's not a working condition. That's something that affects the proceedings in front of Judge Mahoney. On the other end of the spectrum, sure, I mean, legal resources, access to Westlaw and the like, that is at the other end of the spectrum, and we'll say that. But even with respect to that end of the spectrum, our point here is that he's not just an employee, but that he's a special employee. And Carducci said Judge Mahoney and other administrative law judges still are within the CSRA, and we accept that. But with respect to these claims, they're not garden variety, they're not even employment claims, because Judge Mahoney's working conditions are relatively the same as a federal employee, not as a judge, without regard for whether or not the administration decides to selectively assign cases before him. And that brings to another point, the last point I'd like to raise, which is counsel for the government cited Ramspeck and talked about the reason for the ALJ's framework and the reasons why the Administrative Procedure Act insulates and protects administrative law judges. But it goes to show just how extraordinary this case is. The reason for the Administrative Procedure Act and for all of these statutory insulations, Your Honors, isn't because judges would sue their agencies without cause in an attempt to gain leverage in employment disputes. It's because administrative law judges were viewed as hacks. They were merely following their agency's dictates. What happened here is we have the extraordinary step of an ALJ who's actually suing his agency because he believes that the processes before him are unfair. As Judge Boasberg noted in his opinion, you know, if Judge Mahoney is telling the truth on good faith in his pleadings, not all is not well at HUD's OHA right now. And that's why he's asking for this opportunity to proceed with his claims beyond the motion to dismiss. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. We'll take the case under advisement.